Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 129. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Yanosky.
I'm Devin DeRee.
I'm Luis Gonzalez.
Today on The Inner Gamer, happy July 4th to everybody.
Happy July 4th!
Happy July 4th, America! And, we played some games last week. I played Darkest Dungeon. Brett plays Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. Luis plays Ori. We have some free games coming up next month. Since it is the new month, we got free games for PS4 and Xbox One, including new game releases on July 11th. Stay tuned for our gaming news, in which we cover the fun stuff coming from Nintendo, a new game called Last Day of June, and Microsoft had some interesting announcements from E3. And our discussion topic is not a discussion topic. This week, we actually have a very special guest with us, Lucas from Anchor Studios, who is the creators of Detached VR, a very cool, strange VR immersion in space. And we're going to talk about the game, his studio, and the VR industry as a whole. So please stick around. It's going to be a big episode. Brett, please cue the music.
Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
Hello, everybody. It is July 4th, 2017. Happy Independence Day. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Yes.
America! Fuck yeah!
Two very wildly different songs, but both surprisingly equal in patriotism.
That is very true. It's very true.
Seriously.
Oh, my God.
McDonald's. Fuck yeah. Walmart. The internet.
Yeah, Walmart. Yeah.
Baseball.
So if you are a proud American and you like the Inner Gamer podcast, you should go and support our show on Patreon. Head over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute.
We would love to. Only terrorists don't do it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, that's not true.
Quick backtrack, quick.
Also, if you're not American, you should also do it.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, oh yeah. Everybody, yeah. Anybody, no matter where you are, if you're just a human being that likes video games and wants to help us grow.
What's actually funny about that, I mean, just kind of a funny little anecdote, but I was just looking at our Twitter page and we have a lot of people from the Icelandic countries like Sweden, Norway, who
really
have been liking our page lately. Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. We gotta cater to those guys. Yeah.
Y'all have amazing education and healthcare. Thanks for watching.
That is very true. Man, I read something about Norway's healthcare one time. I was like, damn.
Oh, it's
they
incredible.
Get paid to go educate themselves in any country.
Yeah.
As long as they just move back.
Yeah.
It's like, that's
absolutely
pretty sweet. Anyway, cool guys. Well, that is our pitch on donating to us. Also, if you guys are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, please head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/theinnergamerpodcast, and then click on our community group that we've just launched that will be a way for you to engage with the other people that are in our community.
Yeah.
We also have several community events that are about to go online here pretty soon. So if you guys are in the area and want to come hang out and check us out,
keep an eye out for the Facebook page and the Twitter page for some real-time updates on what we're going to be doing as far as events going down. And we'll also be engaging everybody on the social board. So, you know, get in there, talk about games and other stuff that, you know,
interests you.
That interests
in
you.
In games. So anyway, speaking of games, Devin.
Yeah.
Let's get started.
Oh, shit. Okay. So, as mentioned, I said last week on the podcast that I was going to be getting into PC games. And I did. I purchased I think it was like $120 worth of games off the Steam library from the Steam Summer Sale. And for any of you who know what the Steam Summer Sale is, most of these games come in to like, you know, less than $20, like $5, $6, $3. So to spend $120, I have a pretty decent library, I'd say now. Pretty decent. But I did play one game in particular that I'd like to talk about, and it was Darkest Dungeon. And man, oh man, is this game punishing as all hell. And this is me saying this.
I know. This is like the Dark Souls fanboy.
So, Darkest Dungeon is a side-scrolling dungeon crawler, which features a sort of gothic medieval Call of Cthulhu style feel. It's real weird, but it's made by Red Hook Studios. Came out last year, January, in 2016, and it is absolutely fantastic. This game has really been an easy grab for me to get into. One, because it's a turn-based combat. The art style is fantastic, very shallow depth of field with the side scrolling and the way that there's all these crazy layers of atmosphere and the way the dungeons are laid out. The heroes that you play, you can do up to a party of four in a dungeon, and you just go through, you fight skellymans and bandits and big bosses and crazy wizard stuff in dungeons, and it's creepy. I'm having a blast with this so far. This is like if Dungeons and Dragons took some Final Fantasy combat style aesthetics and then mixed in Call of Cthulhu and Dark Souls, this is what you have. It is a crazy bananas ride that I've played so far. And I'd say I think I have about 3 hours into it so far. About.
That's pretty good.
And I've got I've got 3 hours, and I think I have seven heroes.
It's a single player only, right?
Correct. Yeah. It's a single player only experience. Some of the basic mechanics of the game is there is a city builder-esque element to it, where you know you can find a tavern or a church or a blacksmith, and that those things kind of help can help you upgrade your characters that are your heroes that you have. You can recruit multiple heroes, and the reason you have so many heroes is because every time you go in a dungeon, you put your heroes through the frickin' ringer. They have to they have to stave off not just combat, but they also have to stave off stress, which is another piece in there. So like if the dungeon is too dark and you run out of torches to light the dungeon, people start getting more and more stressed out and freaked out, to where if their stress bar fills up, they get a quirk like, oh, I'm a masochist, so I hurt myself a lot, or a sadist. Or there's if you choose one hero to loot too many things, he becomes a kleptomaniac.
Oh my gosh.
What the?
This is crazy.
Yeah. If one of your heroes becomes a kleptomaniac and you don't cure it, when he loots, he's the only person who, when a loot comes on the screen, he will immediately go to it and grab it, and he keeps half of it for himself, leaving only half of the stuff you could have found to go towards the party.
Wow.
It's intense, man. And you can cure these ailments by going back to town. And for instance, if you're if you get stressed out and you were like, oh, I feel like I'm distraught, and they become depressed, you can have them go into the church and pray for a mission. So they'll stay behind and they'll pray for a whole mission. When you come back, they'll have that affliction cured, and their stress is going to be back at zero. So they're fresh to get back into the fight.
Oh my God.
Which is good, because your heroes who just went on an adventure are all fucked up and hurt and stressed. And it's crazy. It's a lot of fun, just because you have this like rolling cast of characters who are always out and about and doing these adventures. But it's hard, man. Like, I will admit, my first 30 to 45 minutes was a complete party wipe, as I just didn't know how the mechanics I didn't know how the mechanics work. So it's like I put all my people to get healed at once, which left me with one person to go out in adventure. Oh, he totally died.
Is it like rewarding though? Where, because I hear everybody say with Dark Souls, the more you play, it's super rewarding to just go back and try and beat that section again, and then once you do it, you just have this intense glory. Is it the same kind of feeling?
All the at least from what I can tell so far, all the maps are randomly generated, especially like the dungeon portions of it. Where,
oh, that's cool.
Well, and not every dungeon mission is the same. You have some that's just, hey, explore 90% of the dungeon, or hey, go kill 70% of all the monsters in this dungeon.
Okay.
And once you fulfill it, you're pretty much like, okay, I'm getting the fuck out of here. There's no, like, you can choose to stay and linger and completely loot the place. I don't recommend it. Run away. Go home. Go home and rest up. It would behoove you to do so.
It would behoove you.
But it's there are a few gripes to it, I will admit. The city building is a bit bland. You don't actually get to choose what building is completed or constructed next. You just get basically one building after each mission you do. So you don't get the blacksmith until like mission 4, and your upgrade materials are already kind of thin by then. So it's like, well, I would love to get my characters to have next level gear, but I can't. I have the building, which is great, but I can't do anything with it.
Right, I gotcha. Huh. Okay. Yeah. So dig, ditch, delay.
Oh, absolutely dig, man. I mean, again, it's very difficult, even by my standards, and I love difficult games. So it comes with that slight caveat, dig, but be prepared to get your ass kicked. Don't feel like you aren't going to enjoy it or you're not going to do well. Or don't go in thinking, oh, I'm going to kick this game's ass. No, be prepared to get slammed hard. It's tough, but it's a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. All the aesthetics, the environment, the music, the narration, all of it has great elements to immerse you into it, and it's a lot of fun. It's punishing, but rewarding. So, yeah, pick it up, guys. Darkest Dungeon.
Awesome. Well, carrying through on the indie game realm, I want to revisit a game that I think we briefly talked about in a previous podcast, but yeah, not to this extent. But I played on Friday Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, which is so awesome. A Xbox game that is part of the ID at Xbox program, trying to get independent developers on the Xbox platform. And it also came out on PC because of the, you know, PC, Microsoft, or Xbox mix going on.
Right.
And so I picked this game up, but we started playing it. I didn't think anything of it. I just thought it had a cute looking art style to it. But it is one of the more intense 4-player cooperative experiences I played, in the sense that you really have to work together to survive. And if there's one piece that's not working properly, you get wrecked quick.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. And so the premise is that you are these friends that are in space, and you're in literally dangerous space time where there's a bunch of shit everywhere in these worlds that you have to fight and combat and save your other friends who have been imprisoned by these dangerous space time creatures. And you have a spaceship, and in the spaceship it looks kind of like a Donkey Kong level in a way, because there's different platforms and there's ladders and things you run around in, and that's how you get to your different pieces of the ship. So you have a pilot that pilots the ship, and then you have somebody that controls the shield that's around the ship, which only covers a portion of the ship. It doesn't cover all of it. So you have to control which direction you're going to block and defend from. And then you also have 4 turrets, one on each corner, each side of the ship. And then there's a special weapon that you can activate at certain times that has a recharge that allows you to just like wreak havoc on everybody around you. And
I'm so glad you're playing this.
No, dude, it's so cool. And the tutorial was so good at introducing you to the game. And I was like, oh, man, this is so easy. We're just going to wreck through this. No problem.
That's an example of a good tutorial.
Yeah. And then we jumped into the first level and we're like, oh, my God. We start with 3 people. And it was so hard with 3 people. It's so challenging because here we have one person controlling the shield, one person, because you always have to pretty much have somebody piloting for the most part, unless you get in a group of a lot of people. That pilot will then go and like man the shield. But I was running around trying to hit everybody from all 4 turrets while we had people running the shields and protecting us and then piloting. And man, it was tough. But what I like so much about this game is the progression system made it so, like, it made me just keep wanting to go, because we found these, you find these little boxes that are hidden throughout the map. And when you find these, they could give you gems, and each gem has a different results. So there's like a power gem, there's a metal gem, there was like a beam gem or something like that. And as you equip these to either your pilot seats, your shield, or your turrets, it upgrades them to have different abilities. So you could go from a single shooting turret to a triple shooting turret, or you can go from a single shooting turret to like a massive ass mace that you sling around and like hit ships with. And then eventually you can combine those into having multiple gems on these different positions and just kill it. Like, there's a homing rocket that you can like control and like move around and like hit people with. And
it's a very busy screen.
Oh my
game.
Gosh.
Like,
there's
a lot going on.
You know what it really reminded me of was a cuter version and more cooperative version of Resogun in terms of its intensity.
I equate it to a much cuter version of Pixel Junk Shooter.
Okay. Yeah. I need to play Pixel Junk Shooter because I've heard
I can see the Pixel Junk Shooter thing. Resogun is like on another level for me. That game is freaking stupid incredible.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah, that game, I still go back to Resogun. It's awesome. But this game to me, I mean, there is only one negative, and that it's a little more difficult if you don't have a full four-player team. But other than that, I mean, it's for me, it's almost perfection for a just indie cooperative experience.
It's so interesting to me to now see, you know, we've all played like a twin stick shooter, and there's even like with Pixel Junk Shooter, there's a co-op twin stick shooter, but this is now a four player co-op twin stick shooter style game. And I marvel at the simplicity, and like I'm surprised that we were just now getting to this.
I know, right?
But it's so cool. It's a great game.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, it was I was playing it on my friends or on Joe, our buddy Joe from Nerd Sloth. We're playing on his Steam account, but it's like $6.74 on Steam right now. So when you guys listen to this podcast, the Steam sale has one more day. So go pick this game up and find four friends to play with because it is really good. So for me, total dig. I'm all about it. I want everybody to play it. And check it out.
Cool.
Very cool.
Luis, you got a game you want to share.
Yeah, so I've been wanting to play this game since it came out on the Xbox, and then I thought to myself for the first time this entire generation, man, I should probably get an Xbox. It's like one of the only exclusives to Xbox made by Microsoft Studios that I've wanted to jump into. I love Halo and Gears of War, don't get me wrong, but not enough to go out and buy a whole system for them. Ori and the Blind Forest, guys. It was the first game I bought on the Steam sale, and the one I finally started playing a few days ago. It is absolutely stunning, guys. And I have like my OLED screen, so it just looks super crisp and amazing. But long story short, Ori and the Blind Forest, Metroidvania, puzzle platformer, made by Microsoft Studios and Moon Studios. And it's just like any other Metroidvania, but on steroids. Nice. It's got combat, it's got puzzles, it's got the most gorgeous environments.
Oh, it's so pretty.
You follow a little dude, I guess. I haven't been following the story because I just want to jump and do stuff. That's how I've always been with Metroidvania games. But you basically follow this little dude, Ori, and this freaking like spirit thing called Rain, I think. Or Sane. And you're basically just going through this entire super gorgeous level with super vibrant colors and super tight platforming to meet some end, I guess. The intro made me cry.
Oh my gosh, me too. Dude, it was so like, why? Intense.
Like, this is some up shit. Like, why? What happened? And I was like, oh my God, what? Why did this happen? And for the longest time, like, I thought some other person was Ori. I'm like, that's not Ori? What? What's going on?
Dude, I thought the same exact thing. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And the story's probably really, really good. And I'm not going to say anything about it because I haven't really been following it. But basically, you have to go and find all these activate all these different spirit trees. At least that's how I'm understanding it. And that's sort of what progresses you across this enormous, what could be considered like a 2D open world where you're kind of going up and down and traversing across different places. And it's very cool. It has all the elements of a normal Metroidvania. But like I said, it's got extremely tight controls. It's floaty. I can't even... Like, think about how Resogun uses particle physics and effects.
Right.
You're blowing up enemies and stuff like that. This is how Ori is in the same way, and it uses color to its advantage, and it's absolutely stunning. The one thing that did suck about it, though, and this isn't anything about the game, or probably, but not really, is I was trying to play it on my computer, and there's a lot of weird things that it does with NVIDIA cards. You have to go in and change certain settings to it stops running on integrated graphics and all this weird stuff. So it took me about an hour to get it up and running. But once yeah, it was ridiculous.
Welcome,
once it did,
welcome to PC.
Yeah, I know. It started running at a very high clip, and it is just an absolutely great game. If you've played any sort of Metroidvania platformer in the last forever, you would absolutely love this game.
So I have a question, just because the term Metroidvania is out there everywhere. It's become a very common place for describing a game. I know this destroys my gaming card, but I never played Metroid or Castlevania. So
get the fuck out.
I know. So
get out of your own house.
It's okay. It's okay. This is good for our listeners, because some of our listeners are casual gamers.
That's
like
fine.
Myself.
No.
And I want to educate them. What is it about a Metroidvania style game that, like, what are the specific details that make that different from like a standard platformer?
So the idea of a Metroidvania is you go one place and you will probably end up back in that place.
Yeah.
So it's not like you start a level and you finish a level. It is you go towards one door. Oh, you can open that door, but you need another piece, but you have to get something to go and get that piece. So it basically...
It's basically
an RPG within a 2D platformer. And
that's what I was going to say, is it's that 2D side-scrolling platformer, but it's got the elements of a... like, I don't want to necessarily say open world, but a fairly open world RPG elements to it, where, kind of like you said, like, you think about the first Metroid and Super Metroid, you start and you come to these areas you can't get to until way later in the game. And that's just how they're really cool in that exploratory element that they have.
Did you guys ever play The Swapper?
Is that one with the astronaut?
Yes.
Yeah, I it's just a puzzle game. I would kind of consider that a Metroidvania, except there's really not that much combat involved there. And
okay, so it's got to have combat's a portion of it in a way.
I mean, that's a very large part of Castlevania, and Metroid is getting upgrades and making your character better.
And then both of them have amazing soundtracks.
Oh yeah, cool. Well, that's good to know, because I've heard that term. There's so many new terms that are like roguelike is a big thing, and like Metroidvania is getting everywhere, or Metroidvania, and there's a lot of these terms. And then I'm hearing a lot of Lovecraftian stuff as of late, so that's been a thing. I don't know if that's because
Lovecraft's
of Devin or what,
well,
but...
Mm-hmm. I just love H.P. Lovecraft's work, but there's definitely a large number of Lovecraftian style horrors coming out that we're seeing.
Cool.
Which I'm fine with.
So
very, very cool.
So dig for you, I'm assuming, for Ori.
Super, super dig. I cannot wait to finish this game and prepare myself for the sequel, which comes out pretty soon. It was announced at E3.
Yeah.
Probably one of my top five announcements from E3. And by announcements, I mean something that wasn't already shown off.
Right.
Wow. So that's a very small group of stuff, but still.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot new announced.
Yeah.
But
I'm
excited to
though.
Keep playing it. And Brett, I know you said you kind of stopped somewhere in there. I highly suggest jumping back into it. It's just a very tight game.
Yeah.
It's very tough to come by something like that. And when you do, and it looks as stunning as it is and sounds as good as it does, there's an orchestra.
Oh, I know. That was amazing.
Yeah, that it's just unmatched.
I think
that's
going to be my next one I play.
Cool.
Yeah, you should definitely do it.
Well, we've had a lot of digs going on in this conversation, but I am going to bring in a ditch and or a delay, probably more of a ditch, but
the negative Nancy over here.
I know. I started playing. So I reported on Guardians of the Galaxy Episode 1 back when it came out, the Telltale game, and mentioned that for me it was a delay at that point, I believe, because it just didn't grip me like I hoped it was, and you could definitely see the flaws in the engine of Telltale games. Well, I've started playing Episode 2, and that still holds true, but even more so, the flaws have come out on another level in Episode 2. So the first one had flaws. The second one has even more flaws because the action is just not there. They went from Episode 1 having like tons of action to Episode 2 having a few space battles where you have to press like right and Q like 3 times in like a 3-minute cutscene, and that's it. And it's just so, I mean, if you get captivated by those characters, it's fine. But the characters aren't even very well executed. I mean, Nolan North plays a good voice for Rocket, but beyond that, there just isn't a lot to grip me there. I don't think I'm going to keep playing this game. I think I'm done with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
You know what I've realized about Guardians of the... Well, not just Guardians of the Galaxy, but Telltale games in general? I feel like those games are vacation games. Like,
oh, yeah.
You don't just sit there thinking when you're at work, oh, I can't wait to go home and right. play Game of Thrones, the Telltale game. No, I feel like I waited to play Walking Dead Season 1 when all episodes were out. And I feel like I've done that with every single Telltale game so far.
I think that's the better way to do it.
I wait until the entire season's out, and then I'll power through it as if it's one solitary game.
Right, right.
And I feel like that's a way you should do it. And I don't agree with the way Telltale releases the episodes.
Yeah, it made sense to me originally, but now it's... I'd rather have them wait and spend a lot of time perfecting it than...
Yeah, and I feel like what I'm noticing is that Telltale is basically an interactive comic.
It is. It very much is, yeah. And it's more so with this. Like, Batman had some interactivity to it. I like the detective mode of that series. Until the Borderlands was incredible. I mean, that was a really well-done game.
Tales of the Borderlands
but
is the best.
For me, that's the last one. And I have, like, Season 2 Walking Dead that I'm going to try and just see if it's any better. But this one's just... I wouldn't get it until it goes, like, super on sale or something. So
interesting.
That's my thoughts on that. But anyway...
That sounds like a delay to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably a delay. Do you guys have anything else you want to chat about?
Just that the Steam sale was amazing and I have a shitload of games to play.
Yeah.
I still need to buy mine. I haven't pulled the trigger yet. I need to like sort through them. I have like 60 games now.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I had a lot.
I have 42 that I haven't played, but not just from this part, but I've now learned how to categorize my Steam library. So I've broken it down.
My need to play is like,
yeah.
And then I bought the Valve pack or whatever.
Oh yeah.
So I have like 30 games. Yes! I'm like, oh God, I'm never gonna... I might play CS Source, like maybe. Maybe. Other than that, I'm just gonna play Left 4 Dead and like a Portal and stuff like that.
Yeah, oh, man.
Also, I'm gonna buy Coder again. You should play
Coder.
Someone.
What's that?
The Old Republic.
Star Wars. Oh, KOTOR. Okay.
KOTOR. Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, we should do that. And then I want to play Mountain of the Blade, Warblade, or whatever it's called with you guys, because that's like 64 players of like medieval action.
Battlegrounds. We need to play that.
Oh, yeah. We're going to play that.
You should have brought your laptop right now. We could have played after.
Yeah.
While we're podcasting.
It's just been awesome.
I really think this game is God fucking damn it.
Live recording.
It 75 would be awesome. Northeast. Oh, God. Oh, God.
All right.
Well,
cool.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up our game segment this week, guys. Stay tuned for our video game releases and gaming news. We have a lot to talk about. It's a new month, and it's going to be good. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Hey, everybody. It is July. We are back, and we're going to talk about some gaming news.
First,
we're going to talk about the free games
free
for
games
the month.
For July.
It is July, and July is a pretty good lineup, actually.
It's a very good lineup, actually.
I am very excited about this. On PlayStation 4 this month, you will be getting three games. One of them is a PS Vita crossplay game. But we will be getting the full version of Until Dawn, which is
the
horror game featuring my favorite Hayden, whatever her last name is.
Panettiere.
There we go. That's what I was looking for. Eight friends trapped together in a remote mountain retreat, and they aren't alone, and they must live through in one piece. This game was intriguing because it has every decision you make results in life and death for the players in the game. And I believe this is the development team that's also working on... No, it's not. It's the other team that's doing this. I was going to say Detroit Become Human, but that's the Heavy Rain people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Until Dawn's coming out. If you guys haven't played that, it's worth picking up and checking it out because it's free. In addition, we were talking about Telltale earlier. Game of Thrones, ironically, is going to be coming to the PS4 as well. This
is
the full six-part series.
Yeah.
That is worth trying if you're interested in the Game of Thrones world.
With it being free, there's no reason not to play it, and it is more stuff into the Game of Thrones characters, and the voice actors do a good job of coming in and doing the voiceovers for it. So
yeah,
I highly suggest it. It's free. Pick it up. Do it.
Yeah.
Play it.
I played it a little bit, and I was just kind of... It was hard to get captivated by it because I'd never heard of these people before, other than just like in passing, and it was really weird seeing these people that I hadn't been invested in like I had with the rest of the world of Game of Thrones. And Yeah, but it is still worth picking up if you want to just try it out because it's free. Last but not least, we have a game coming out called Don't Die, Mr. Robot. This is a cute, colorful, blissful,
so adorable,
frantic action game that arcade fans have been, as they say, waiting for all their lives. So Mr. Robot likes fruit, but whenever he tries to eat one, it explodes. So these explosions destroy the endless horde of robotic machines trying to squish, zap, stomp, and bite him. So it looks pretty exciting, and it's a fun little arcade game. I don't remember if it's cooperative or not, but it looks like it has that.
I don't know, but
vein.
It looks adorable.
Yeah. On the Xbox One, if you guys are Xbox owners, you get four games, two of which are Xbox 360 cross-platform, and the other two are not. One is Grow Up, which, if you guys haven't played this series, it's pretty interesting and has a really cool art style with a little guy that's trying to climb to the moon and get up there and gather ship parts and carry them to the moon. Then there's a game called Runbo. I didn't know anything about this, but I looked it up and I was like, man, we have to play this. Nine player co-op.
Wait, nine
players, competitive modes, nine players local and online, and a single player adventure. It's a color based platformer that looks crazy.
Nine players?
Nine. I don't know how that works, but I mean, obviously you can't
have...
What
an arbitrary number.
I know, right? Like, I don't know how that... I mean, it's not team... Well, it might be team based. I don't know. But it looks really good. I mean, it's lots of... I mean, like I said, it's called Rumbo, so there's a ton of colors everywhere.
Fuck it. It's free. Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's try it out.
Let's do it.
It's also like $6 or $7 or $8 on the Steam sale right now if you don't have an Xbox and want to pick it up. Then we have Kane and Lynch 2 Dog Days, which is the cooperative game with Kane and Lynch, which kind of reminds me a little bit of A Way Out and just the dynamic of the characters where there's like two different characters that are co-op.
Yeah,
but
except
A Way Out,
the characters look to be at least somewhat level-headed. Kane and Lynch are absolute psychopaths.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, one's a self-medicated psychopath, so that sounds better.
Yeah, that's totally better.
I played a little bit of this game back in the day. It was pretty fun, so it's worth trying if you guys are interested in that. And then finally, we have Lego Pirates of the Caribbean, which, I mean, nothing to really be said about that other than it's Pirates of the Caribbean Legos. So if you like the Lego games...
Which you should, because they're freaking great.
Yes. It is going to be free. So, that is it.
Now, as far as upcoming releases for the next week, be prepared. June 11th, we have Final Fantasy The Zodiac Age. This is a DLC for the Final Fantasy XII series. Enter an era of war within the world of Ibalis, the small kingdom of Dalmasca, conquered by the Archadian Empire is left in ruin and uncertainty. Princess Ash, the one and only heir to the throne, devotes herself to the resistance to liberate her country. Anybody play Final Fantasy XII at this table?
No.
Nope.
Okay, well, I don't either, but this all sounds very Final Fantasy-y with all the crazy names and stuff going on. I know a number of my friends who have played Final Fantasy XII. When it came to MMOs, I was pretty much a WoW guy, so I stuck with that. But it's popular enough, so if you enjoy Final Fantasy XII, look out for The Zodiac Age.
Yeah.
On PS4. And then also on June 11th, same day, we have Fable Fortune for the Xbox One and PC, which Fable Fortune is a collectible card game that combines the iconic world and characters of the Fable series with fast-paced tactical gameplay. Choose between good and evil to alter your special abilities and even the cards in your deck. So it's a card game from the Fable series.
Basically, Microsoft is like, we got to get in on this Hearthstone stuff, so let's make a game based on a series that's most closely related to that fantasy world.
Yeah, that high fantasy style kind of card game. Yeah.
It's like everybody's doing it. I mean, you got The Witcher one, you got Hearthstone, you have Elder Scrolls Legends.
And Gwent, but this looks very ripped off from...
Yeah, and it's interesting because they use like 3D pieces, which is, I mean, that's them trying to be different and stuff like that, but it was weird seeing that. I was like, man, that's so different.
It looks 3D Gwent.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's going to be any good. I know it was at E3, but, you know, lines were so long, I didn't get a chance to play it. But that is something available. So that's all we got coming out. We are about to enter into the... Oh, you know, I had June on here. It's actually July. Did you say July? I can't remember.
I did say July.
Okay, good.
I hope I said July.
I totally... Okay, so anyway, just so you guys know, those are July 11th dates, not June
I'm
dates.
Not some crazy time wrong. Traveler. These yeah. are all for July, July 11th.
But this is the calm before the storm. We have a lot of good stuff coming out last half of July and then on into August, September, October, November, and December. So get all your games out now that you're behind on. Otherwise, yeah. you won't be able to.
Nope.
All right. Anyway, Louise, you want to jump us into the first exciting news story we have?
Ooh, geez. Oh, got a bunch of news stories for you guys today. The biggest of which is about to be announced right now, guys. Nintendo has officially come out and announced the Super Nintendo Classic as a follow-up to the NES Classic, the cult favorite of all of America. As you know, they've discontinued the NES Classic, but are following up with quite possibly the greatest collection of games ever. The SNES Classic is going to be releasing on September 29th for $80 and will come with 21 games, including the previously unreleased Star Fox 2. How could anybody have called that 30 years from the release of the Super Nintendo that they would be releasing a new Super Nintendo game?
I believe
that is ridiculous.
I mean, I don't care because it's amazing.
It's freaking insane. So obviously this is an enormous announcement for Nintendo and people are already freaking out and scalpers are already thinking that they're going to buy everything and sell them for ridiculous markups. But as we just sit on this announcement and appreciate this announcement, let us listen to the full list of games that will be coming to the Super Nintendo Classic. In no particular order, Contra 3, The Alien Wars, Donkey Kong Country, Earthbound, Final Fantasy 3, F-Zero, actually they're in alphabetical order, Kirby Superstar, Kirby's Dream Course, The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, Mega Man X, Secret of Mana, Star Fox 1, and Star Fox 2. Don't forget, this was never released, ever. Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Super Castlevania 4, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, Super Mario Kart, Super Mario RPG, these last supers are all amazing. Super Mario World, Super Metroid, and Super Punch-Out, and Yoshi's Island.
Devin's flipping out right now.
I really am. I am a Super Nintendo junkie. I have played
wait.
Almost
are you
all of those games.
Are you a Super Nintendo junkie?
That's bad.
That's terrible.
That's terrible.
That was
wasn't
fucking
even
awful.
Slightly clever.
No. That was the that was like if clever like had excrement coming out of its anus.
Yep.
So anyway.
Your poop, bro.
This is awesome. I mean,
it's really awesome.
It's really
A Link
huge.
To the Past.
Like, I mean, A Link to the Past is one of my absolute favorite games of all time. I can still play that game over and over. I don't give a shit. Star Fox was one of the first pilot kind of games I ever got into. Super Ghouls and Goblins is probably one of the most difficult games ever made, but I still played it. And just the titles alone, not to mention that we're getting a Star Fox that was never released. This is huge. And for $80, I'm not going to get one, man. They're going to sell out before I can even try to buy one on Amazon.
It's kind of ridiculous. And looking at this, I think I mentioned this earlier, maybe not on the cast, but this is a collection of 20, possibly 21, if Star Fox 2 reviews well, 20 of the greatest games like to ever come out. Like
ever.
There's probably 10 or 15 of these that are in the top 100 of all time, and I think one of them is probably the best game ever in Legend of Zelda Link to the Past. Like, there are so many fantastic games in here, and they are all coming to you in a single package that you can play with your friends and family. How amazing is that?
That's
and the price point is so good.
$80
$4 for each of these games is pretty insane. That said, I'm wondering where Nintendo is going to find the ability to create like to manufacture these, seeing as though the Switch is also in crazy stupid demand.
Yeah, I know. It's gonna be tough. They say they're really increasing the numbers of these, but I mean, the NES was impossible to find like the day of, and this is the SNES, which I think it probably has a larger pool of people interested in it just because it is the second generation. So the first generation had everybody that was all about NES, but there wasn't as many people as, I mean, SNES, I was alive when the SNES came out, and I played the SNES. The NES I only played because people had it, but it wasn't something that was released during my lifetime. So, what was it? When was it released? NES, original Nintendo. It was in the 80s, right?
80s,
late
80s? Yeah. Yeah.
So I was barely born in the 80s, so the just, yeah. So SNES, man, I'm pretty pumped. I'm totally going to get this. I don't care what I have to do. Stop working that day, whatever. I'm going to stand in line. I'm going to get this.
I am too, man. I'm hoping that there's more than we realize.
Yeah. Awesome. So next story we have, I thought this was really interesting. There is a company called Varjo or Varge something or another. They are based out of Helsinki, Finland.
And Varjo.
They are they're promising human eye resolutions for virtual reality this year. And this is super interesting because, I mean, virtual reality already looks really good, but a lot of people say that the way to really sell it is to make it feel as real to life as possible. And these guys have developed a system that could potentially reach that point. They have taken a Rift headset and a Rift lens and applied another lens on top of it using OLED type of technology and have been able to make the difference in quality significant in the clarity of the picture. And they are saying that they have prototypes that are already working for this platform, and it's literally 70 times the resolution of the Rift's image, and that's huge. That's huge numbers.
We're advancing VR technology at an extrapolated rate now.
Yes. So I'm not going to talk much more on this simply because if you stay tuned for our third section, which is our discussion topic, we have an interview with a VR CEO of Anshar Studios based out of Poland. And we talk extensively about the future of virtual reality and coming from a developer's perspective, how hard it is to make games with the rapid speed of change that's happening in the current state of VR, because he talks about developing a game and how by the time they release it, VR tech has advanced so much, so many steps forward. And it's a really interesting conversation. So stay tuned for that part. And we go dive much deeper into this in that conversation. So be sure and check that out. So next topic of the day that we have is Rick and Morty, guys. This is a video game podcast, but because it's related to video games, there's a part that's related to video games, I figured it was worth mentioning.
This is absolutely worth mentioning.
This is totally worth
this
mentioning.
This is absolutely
so,
worth mentioning.
So, first part of the story, Rick and Morty is coming to Rocket League, and it's already come out to Gang Beasts, because I lit up Gang Beasts the other day and realized you can play as a Rick and a Morty
that's
in
fantastic.
Gang Beasts, which was awesome. But they're bringing a bunch of new accessories and stuff to Rocket League from Rick and Morty. But more importantly, the release date of season 3 is here.
I'm Pickle Rick!
Oh, man. So July 30th, Rick and Morty's back. The trailer's out right now. Go check it out.
It's fantastic.
It looks crazy. There's so many creatures and things and explosions and just
welcome
stuff.
To the darkest venture of our timeline yet.
I showed my parents last night the trailer, and they don't know anything about Rick and Morty other than I talk about it on occasion, and they were like, "What the hell is this crap?" I was like, "No,
no, you
the
don't."
The first
understand.
Problem is
it's
you said
so
crap.
Good.
It's like they said in the trailer. It's so smart, and what did they say? Like, and it's so smart that it can be so stupid, or something like that.
Yeah.
And
because it's so brilliant and clever, that's how they get away with telling so many dick and fart jokes.
It's true.
That is very true. That's very true. So, Rick and Morty, Rocket League,
take over
Rick
an
and Morty,
civilization because of your stupid boobs.
That's awesome.
Probably one of my favorite lines of Rick's.
So that's pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah. Here's something interesting. So, we all watched E3.
Yes.
A pretty good E3, mm-hmm. Not an amazing one, but a pretty good one. We all made the prediction prior to E3 that Microsoft really needed to bring it to the table in regards to their showcase, because they have been really kind of lackluster over the last year. So when it came to their showcase, it was a pretty good one. We had the now Xbox One X which is, you know, the new powerhouse of a console. We have a series of titles, including Anthem, which is going to be what looks to be an incredible game.
Right.
And now, as it has been said, according to them anyways, Microsoft held back on its E3 press briefings so not to show games too early.
Hmm. I hope that's true.
I know, right? I hope that's true. Now, there's a couple of implications with this. One, if this isn't true and this is just a stalling tactic, which I hope it's not, that's a really shitty tactic. However, if this is true, I'm very curious as to what it is that they're trying to hold off on.
Yeah, now, like what are they working on? And
the reason I say that is because we've said on this podcast specifically, having a powerful console is great, but I'm going to need to know what games I'm going to be playing on it that are going to that are really going to be the hinge pin of me buying it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We've said that extensively. I'm not going to spend this much money on a console if I don't have any games to play on it. So this being the case, it's interesting that they would even... I would think that E3 is going to be the one that you're going to show all this off.
Yeah, you would think so.
You would think.
I mean, I hope this is true, and my problem with this statement is that where have they been the last 2 years? Like, there hasn't been much that's come out game-wise, and now they're like, we've held back. Well, you've already been holding back for 2 years now.
Yeah.
Because we haven't... I mean, we saw Halo 5, and then we saw Gear of War 4, but we haven't seen any major new IPs or anything coming out of the Microsoft lineup. I mean, we know about like Sea of Thieves coming out, and we know about Crackdown and stuff like that. But other than that, there's not a lot in the, and then Forza, but there's not a lot in the docket. I mean, that's one new IP right there in that list, Sea of Thieves, and that's it.
Yeah.
So what are they?
Well, Phil Spencer was quoted in this article that we are investing in new things. We've signed things just recently. I thought about, hey, from a PR standpoint, it'd be really easier for me to put a trailer on a screen, even though I know that the game's not coming for 2.5 or 3 years. I didn't want to do that. So I can kind of understand that, because from that quote, what I got was kind of my gripe with Sony's E3, which is why I was so personally disappointed in Sony's, was all you fucking did was just
the same stuff.
You showed me trailers for games that you already announced at the last one. And yeah, granted, some of them were extended, and that's all well and good, but fuck, you're the big powerhouse. Why didn't you bring anything new?
You know, it's kind of impressive to me too, is that, I mean, they still had a really good showing. Microsoft did, considering how little things that they had. But I'm curious because, you know, I mentioned also one of my predictions was that they were going to have a big, big VR push for this, and they didn't have that. So I wonder if this is why this is the statement, is that they're working on some kind of heavy integration with VR, AR, because they've been developing HoloLens, they've been developing VR headsets, so we know that that's all in process. Maybe they've figured out a breakthrough that in the next 2 or 3 years, I mean, we have this human eye level technology of VR. Maybe we're going to see this all kind of come together in fruition in the next couple of years on a Microsoft console, and that really blow our minds. That would be awesome. I hope that's what's happening, but they just need to, they got to get some stuff out there, because they're not losing much, because there's still plenty of third party games for them to play. But like people like me that would get an Xbox or use my Xbox more if I knew that there was more out there, I just have no reason to, because I have other consoles that have that and then some.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
and here's another thing, just a random thought. What other convention or what other platform would they have to announce any other games coming out this year, or not just this year, but just for like next year? I mean, E3's done. I mean, QuakeCon's coming up, but even then,
GamesCon. I mean, they'll do some stuff at GamesCon or whatever. But other than that, yeah, that's like, it.
You want to talk about you know, where all eyes are on a show, it's E3, man.
Yeah.
Especially when it was opened up to the public.
Oh, and I found out that you can't do Destruction in Crackdown 3 on single player. Like, that's not the goal of the game. It's only in, like, multiplayer that that's the goal. And I wanted to blow things up.
Well, you'll have to play with buddies.
Anyway, yeah, that's true. So next story, I want to just throw this out there real quick. This is a game that kind of got missed during E3, but it is a game called Last Day of June. It was given a date and a new trailer. It's coming out on PS4 and PC. And I want to mention this because I just want everybody to go online and look at this trailer because, one, it's really kind of heartfelt in its presentation. And it also has a very unique watercolor, kind of almost Van Gogh-ish art style to it that just really blew my mind in terms of, I mean, the fact that they went this direction. And I wonder why they went this direction other than it's just very pretty to look at, but it's just, it's a really cool thing to watch. And if you have a chance, go look up Last Day of June. There are two characters. It's a story about love and loss. Looks very sad. There's a gameplay mechanic that kind of reminds me of What Remains of Edith Finch in the sense that you walk up to these like pictures and transport into this portal and enter into the lives of different people, it seems, or experience something from those people. But it's gonna be $20 and it comes out August 24th. So check that out. And yeah, we'll probably review it on the podcast whenever it does come out.
Looks pretty as
shit. Very cool.
So last thing we have, this is just a quick worth mentioning story. We have StarCraft Remastered finally got a release date on August 14th for a mere $14.99. So if you guys are big StarCraft fans,
you must construct additional pylons.
You must construct additional pylons and spend more money and spend $15 if you want to play StarCraft, the original, in a remastered format,
on
4K.
On August 14th.
On August 14th.
Not far away.
Yeah, that's very close. So I'm excited. I'll probably pick it up just because
it's really hard to play the old version. I don't give a shit.
On low graphics and stuff.
We're
going to
play the shit out of this.
But yeah, we'll have to construct additional pylons together. It'll be fun.
I'm going to fucking tear in your ass. All you're going to hear is nuclear launch detected.
Nuclear launch detected.
Nuclear launch detected.
I hate that sound.
Motherfucker!
That's the worst. Last thing real quick. If you guys go to theinnergamer.net/read, I wrote an article this week about Need for Speed and how I don't think that this next game will be the game that makes Need for Speed.
You wrote up some really interesting points in that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Really interesting points, man.
Yeah. So I mentioned in the article that Test Drive Unlimited is a game that came out a long time ago that I really, really, really loved, but it just came out the wrong time. The tech wasn't there yet to support this kind of network that they were trying to build. And I didn't mention the article, but there was a game that came out, Need for Speed World, that tried to be an MMO kind of racing game, but it was made by a different developer. It was made for like phones and stuff or something like that. It was bad. But I think Need for Speed as a brand has the potential to make a game like this and make it really good because there's so many things that they've done right with capturing the thrill of racing and customizing cars to make them your own, just like you do in an MMO. When you start, you customize your character. They have this mastered in the Need for Speed franchise, and they also have teams that know how to build massive worlds, and they just need to pull those resources together and make something that, like, forget the story part. We've realized they've made like two or three games now with a story. All of them have not been very good. I don't think they should focus on story. They should focus on the world being a story. And that's what needs to happen because Test Drive Unlimited almost achieved that. And that was like way back in the day. Now we have all this technology. Let's push for that idea again. Make it super open world, super big. Make it where it's very collaborative with your friends so you can race together and just do stuff together all the time in the game. And I think that would be what's important for them. So we'll see. Go check it out. Innergamer.net/read. It is there.
It's a good article.
Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, that wraps up our news segment, guys. If we missed something or there's something you would like to hear us talk about, let us know at theinnergamer.net. And our discussion this week, as I mentioned before, is with Lucas I'm not going to butcher his last name. It's correct in the next segment. Listen for Lucas. Wow. He is the CEO of Anshar Studios, wow, creator of Detached VR. It's a game that is a zero gravity space game on the VR platforms. It is very cool. And we have a very, very interesting discussion on building VR in space and the limitations of trying to build a game over 2 or 3 years and how fast VR tech changes during that development time and just what it's like, yeah, to manage a team. He has a team of really 40 cool, people,
yeah,
that really he cool works with. So
into the VR industry. So stay, yeah, tuned.
Check it out. And we'll be back after the break.
The break.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Inner Gamer podcast. We have a very special interview today. We have Lucas Hasura on from Anshar Studios. Lucas, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So you have just recently brought out a game called Detached, which is a virtual reality game for the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive. Can you tell us a little bit about what that game is?
Yeah, so Detached is a space simulator, you might say, or space experience VR game. The idea came out, and it's not a secret at all, when I went to see Gravity.
Oh, nice.
With Clooney and Sandra Bullock. So actually, many people think that we stole the idea from Adrift, which is not true. We stole that idea from Gravity. So this is when I came up with an idea. We actually were thinking about for a couple of weeks back then what to do in VR. We were really interested in the technology. We're a very young company. So we were thinking like, okay, VR seems like a good foothold to have when you're a young company. More opportunities maybe will come later. So it was actually very opportunistic if you think about it. Detached is not a very, you know, like artistic dream to create. I always wanted to be an astronaut kind of thing. No, it's actually not. I went to see a Gravity movie. I thought it was awesome. The breath of Sandra Bullock and the camera angles reminded me how awesome it might be in VR. And I was really worried back then about motion sickness. So the first thing we did is created a fast prototype of how would you behave if you spin a lot in space. And when we did that prototype and we figured out that, yeah, we have something special here. That's a really cool feeling for some, really intense feeling, maybe too intense for others. But basically, this is when I said after that prototype that, yeah, we're going to do this.
So awesome. After all these trials and errors, how many people threw up in the making of this game?
Yeah, actually zero. That's fascinating. We showed that game to over 3,000 people on various trade shows and various conferences. So it's actually a little bit of a myth of Detached that everybody's puking while playing that game. obviously, there are people who are having a hard time, right?
Right.
And from our data, it's actually about 20 to 30% of people.
Okay.
Who have problem with Detached. And what we advise to when you play, when you have problems in any game, actually, with motion sickness, is not powering through it. Because when you power through it, for example, you force yourself to play for 40 minutes and you're feeling terrible.
Right, right.
Then actually you might have like entire day screwed, right? You might feel actually sick for entire day.
Right.
So what we advise is if you're feeling nausea, it's not for you, then just take off the headset and in 5 minutes you'll be fine. Like nothing's going to happen to you.
Right.
But nobody actually puked. So never happened, or at least never on my watch. It's like I never actually saw that, and I saw like 3,000 people playing my game.
So how has that changed from like, I mean, when you said you've been in development for 3 years. So when you first started working on this and getting it going, I mean, I'm sure you did run into more issues just internally of like, oh, this doesn't feel right. So explain a little bit about how you approach issues like this, because one, it's virtual reality, which some people just haven't gotten used to yet, and two, you're in space, so, and it's zero gravity, so like there's a lot of, you know, I mean, a lot on this to, you can easily make it not good, but you guys did a good job.
When you put it this way, it sounds really stupid that we made this game, right?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I don't think it's stupid at all. I think it's amazing that you guys did this.
Of a niche, and then game in it. But what actually happened is I was very susceptible to VR nausea.
Yeah.
Enough. And I'm a walking and breathing proof that after a couple of weeks you get used to it.
Right.
But that's also not a very good pitch. It's like suffer for a few weeks and you'll be fine. Actually not using that. We're actually encouraging people not to play VR if they feel bad. But for me, I had my my survival training in Elite Dangerous. So that game that I spent most of my time, I think, in VR.
Okay.
And I had a lot of ideas for steering and a lot of inspiration for the total freedom of movement came from Elite Dangerous, played with DK2. Okay. So DK2 had a horrible resolution, like you couldn't read anything in Elite Dangerous, actually, so text was horrible, but the feeling of space was amazing. So actually the second inspiration, while we were developing already Detached, we played also a lot, I played a lot of Elite Dangerous, and it was a huge inspiration for me. So, and as far as the nausea goes, the biggest issue for us was actually optimization.
Okay.
Because we have prototypes that we have, like, for example, 30 frames per second on average, which were like player killers. Like 95% of people couldn't play those.
Right.
So I already know that frame rate is really important. And this is something that we struggle a lot in terms of art. Artists hated that project, actually. Like, everybody's saying that art is really good in Detached. My artists actually hate Detached. And they hate Detached because there were so many constraints put on them. So many, like, technologies that you used, like, in last generation, actually, of consoles, for example. So, like, using only one dynamic light or no dynamic lights at all, or using only a couple of materials, etc. So they had so many constraints, and you might say that, yeah, when you're constrained, you're more creative or whatever, but, yeah, they didn't like it.
Right. So, that's interesting. So what engine did you guys use to develop this? Was it was Unreal, right?
Yeah, the first prototype we created, I think it was back in 2013, I think, when Unreal went live.
Yeah.
So we created the first prototype on Unity. It took us about a month. And then I went to GDC, and Epic announced that Unreal would be free, well, besides the 5%. And we said, hey, maybe we'll try Unreal because it looks really cool. And so we gave it another month, and we created the exactly same prototype. And back then it was Unity 4, right? So we created not even 4.5, it was like 4.1 or something like that. And we created a prototype in Unreal, and it looked much better.
Yeah.
So that's when we decided to go with Unreal. And the reason for that is not that Unity is, there's something wrong with Unity, because actually you can do really amazing art in Unity. The problem was that this project was made using one programmer, okay?
Wow.
I have a really strong art team, and with Unity, they simply didn't have the tools back then. Now Unity is pressing, in Unity 5, a newer version, is pressing the tool issues. But back then, to create a really awesome art in Unity, you required programmers that were really good in, like, shader programming and low-level art technology. So this is simply somebody that, like, I would need to hire like two or three extra programmers. What I could do in Unreal with only one programmer, because they had sufficient amount of tools, the artists had sufficient amount of tools to create it without a programmer.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So let's kind of migrate to the story conversation a little bit. So I noticed that with the game, you guys went for essentially a comic book style illustrated storytelling for the cinematics and everything. So what inspired that? And can you go into talking about that a little bit more?
Yeah, now what I'm like hearing this entire podcast in my head, this is going to be the most uninspiring podcast in the world, because the reason we did like a cutscene story animatic for Detach is not some artistic vision of our art director. No, the reason for that is that we had so much to do in optimizing and creating art for Detached. We're in the middle of production of Detached and racing to the finish line, to the launch, that we simply had absolutely no resources to create a live action trailer from inside the engine, right? With characters, mockups, etc. We simply didn't have the manpower to do that. And what we did have on board was a very talented illustrator. So that was actually the okay. So if we have a very talented illustrator who at the moment could be like took away from his project and used in Detached, because as I said, we as you know, Anshar is creating usually multiple projects on a time because we're also a work for hire company. So we had this illustrator free, and that was like mainly the reason that we did that, because we simply couldn't afford to create a live action movie.
I mean, I think that's actually a good thing to hear, because you don't often hear that out there. And like, you know, there's the other people that are developing something may be like, okay, I don't have the time for this, or I don't have the budget for this, or something like that. And, you know, this is a good alternative to still make it, you know, cinematic, you know, have a story to tell, but do it to where you can focus on what really matters, which is the VR gameplay experience that you want to make really solid. So I think that's a good route for you guys to have gone, is to do that. And I think the illustrations were fantastic. So kudos to the illustrator as well. They look really good.
Yeah. So yeah, he's good.
That's awesome. So with Detached, I mean, you guys have this came out roughly how long ago now?
Like on May 18th, so like 2 weeks ago.
Okay, awesome. So how has the reception been so far?
Okay, so we have like 79% on Steam,
yeah,
which is, as far as I know, mostly positive.
Yeah, sometimes I think that's good.
Sometimes we hit very positive, and then somebody says that he's getting nauseated and he gives a bad review. So, and then we need to wait for another 9 positive reviews from somebody, etc. But yeah, basically the reception is actually really good, but the niche thing kicked in, and we actually didn't sell that much copies, but we sold as much as expected in the VR market.
Yeah.
So right now, including early access, we sold like something around 4,000 copies. And we know that with the consoles, because we're going to port it to PlayStation, hopefully to Xbox VR someday. And we're gonna earn our money back and earn some more on that. So we're quite happy. But actually, what's more important for us as a company is that we show the world that we can do this. It's like, okay, so there's a team in Poland that knows their stuff about VR, knows how to do art, how to do programming. I mean, the reviews are okay, the quality is okay. So this is very important when, for example, we talk to our clients as a third party, right? It's like that we didn't screw this one up. We actually have the competencies to create a good game. And I know that video game developers hate that word, and I also hate that word, but that we can deliver a good product, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that, but because let's not kid ourselves, Detached was a technological project, right? It was like, hey, there's this cool technology out there. What cool can we make with it? Right, it didn't like go from the soul that, for example, as I said before, I always wanted to be an astronaut or something like that. No, I wanted to create a cool experience in VR. That was our main goal.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I want to talk to you a little bit about that. Being a VR developer and having publish a game in virtual reality. You know, a lot of what we're seeing right now in VR, since it is such early technology, is these types of experiences. And it's been hard for developers to do full AAA title style of games because, I mean, as you mentioned, there's a lot of technical challenges you have to overcome. So where do you think VR is going in the future? And like, what are your expectations for the next, say, 2, 3, 4 years down the line? Like, what do you see changing? What do you see coming? Things like that.
Okay. So, so obviously I have no like exact idea what's coming,
right.
But what I can say you for sure is that if you look at the history, if you look at touch screens, for example, right, and how they revolutionized, well, basically the entire like civilized world, right? Smartphones, basically touch screens on smartphones. So we right now are in pre iPod touch era, okay, in VR.
Okay.
So the technology existed long before iPod touch. The touchscreen existed, like companies like Microsoft, Samsung, etc. They already showed that technology. Nobody was really that interested besides a couple of really anxious early adopters. So it's exactly the same thing right now, maybe with a little bit of more PR splash, but basically it's the same thing. We are waiting for the iPod touch of VR right now. I don't know who's going to do it, maybe Apple. Obviously, Apple is working on a VR headset. Like, obviously, it's a secret. Obviously, nobody knows that, but everybody knows that, right? So, and nobody knows when it's going to roll out, if it's going to roll out, maybe in 8 years, maybe in 5 years. I don't know. Maybe it's not going to be Apple this time. Maybe somebody else delivers the iPod Touch of VR. But we're definitely waiting for equipment that have the possibility of going mass market. The current generation of VR is absolutely not mass marketable, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So we're in early access, in early adopter space, and this technology is really cool, and you can see the glimpse of the future in it. If you have enough imagination, you can see that we're going into that direction 100%. And it doesn't, and actually people say, hey, I'm a more of a believer in AR, for example. It's the same thing. VR is AR with 100% of virtual. Right, basically.
Right.
So it's the same technology. It will go in pair. It's going to be mixed reality at the end of the day. And it's going to change the world one way or another. But I don't think it's going to change in 2 years, actually. And I don't think it's going to change in 3 years. I think that we're seeing it's like solar energy, what's happening right now. I mean, cars are not going to disappear in 2 years, I mean, oil cars, right?
Right.
Oil-based petroleum. They're not going to disappear in 2 years. It took like 13 years, I think, if I remember correctly from history. It took 13 years for horses to disappear, right, when the car was introduced. So there's going to take a lot of time for oil car to expire, but we already know right now that it's going to expire. So what I'm saying right now is mixed reality is absolutely the future. I mean, monitors are dead for me.
Okay.
The question is it going to happen in 5 years? Is it going to happen in 10 years? I don't know, right? I'm not a engineer. I mean, I am an engineer. I'm not a mixed reality specialist engineer unlimited budget working on it right now, right? And there are one of the smartest people in the world work right now on AI, sending people to Mars, and mixed reality, right? I think it's absolutely the future. It's just people are, I don't know why, maybe because of the PR hype, people are a little bit disappointed that it's not holodeck yet, right?
Right.
Because it isn't. And obviously, it's.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is just due to the fact that people, I mean, you're always going to have the naysayers out there. Once you get people playing it that aren't understanding of this technology because it's so new, they're going to just be like, oh, this just doesn't make sense to me. Like I was talking to somebody the other day about I'm a big fan of Tesla and their electric cars and what they're doing with the car space. And you know, I had somebody that was talking negatively about them, and I'm like, you know, they haven't had a lot of time yet to make this what it could be. Whereas, you know, gasoline powered cars or petroleum based cars and all that, like, they've had over 100 years or getting around 100 years of time to iterate and make these things better. And with VR, like, yes, VR has been around since like the 80s and stuff like that. However, VR as something that seems like a viable piece of technology hasn't happened until now, because the computing power is caught up with what's necessary to make it seem like something that could become mass market.
Yeah, but actually, if you think about it, what happened right now in VR never happened before, because VR is not about output. That's also, from my point of view, that's the biggest mistake of people make, is VR is not output. I mean, the biggest revolution in VR is input. So the fact that we have head tracking and the fact that we have touch controls. So that's the biggest revolution, because output itself is not holodeck, right?
Right.
So the feel of presence in VR doesn't come from the fact that it covers your entire eyes. It comes from the fact that it responds to the movement of your head. And then when you add touch controls on it, on the top of that, that makes the most awesome VR experience. So so I think that actually input is the future of VR, right? And obviously we're going to have bigger resolutions. We're going to have like better technology, less problems with like shimmering, ghosting, and whatever happens with anti-aliasing, and all those problems are going to go away. But actually, if right now you would put you would have the exact same content we have right now and the exact same input right now, just had an awesome best output ever, VR wouldn't go mass market either way.
Yeah.
Because it's not that's not what VR is about. So when VR, you have this great avatar on Skype with glasses, right? So when this is going to be VR, those glasses that I can put on, and did you play Heavy Rain, for example?
No, I did not.
Heavy Rain is this, it has remastered on PlayStation 4,
right?
But it's a PlayStation 3 title from Cage, so the guy who made Beyond and Fahrenheit before. And there's this agent that has exactly those AR mixed VR glasses on his head inside that game.
Okay.
And you can, for example, work changing environments. So he's like typing on his virtual laptop sitting near, I don't know, on the top of Mount Everest. So that's the future, and that's the mass market, but we're not there yet, right?
Right. And That's really cool.
Yeah, you just blew our minds over here. I wasn't thinking about it was the input. I was thinking about the output. Or other way, was it the other way around?
No, yeah, the other way around.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that makes a lot of sense too, because like as a podcast group, we have an HTC Vive, we have the Oculus Rift, and we have the PSVR. And when I got the PSVR, like, I had the Oculus first, but I hadn't gotten the touch controllers yet because they weren't released. They hadn't shipped to me yet. So when I was playing with the Move controllers and stuff, I was like, oh, this is cool. But it felt very limiting. And having already played Oculus, which to me feels more immersive. Once I got those touch controllers from Oculus, I was like, this is a completely different experience. And it just really completely changed the game, and I haven't yet tried. I know they just came out of experiment the full room VR tracking with Oculus now, so I haven't put that to the test yet because I need to get another sensor. But I mean, that is really a huge difference there.
Yeah, so here's the kicker, right? Touch controllers and room scale is actually the closest you can get to holodeck and the best thing right now that you can have in VR. And we started before that happened. So you have, in Detached, you have first person. Actually, we have touch controls, but actually the game was primarily designed for gamepad controls, right? So there's a lesson for you. If you're in a R&D type of a technology, have a short production cycle, because the environment changes around you really quickly, right? So Knowing what I know right now, knowing where the technology is going to go, probably 3 years ago, I would have decided to do an entire different game.
Right.
Because touch controls happen when we were in the middle of the development, actually, right?
Right.
And yeah, they are really cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what are some games that you are really interested in right now, whether it be VR or not VR, that... you know, just appeal to you. So something that just came out recently that you want to talk about that you're like, this is a game worth playing that you didn't develop.
Yeah, that's a tough question because you have a lot of angles. I mean, you have the player geek angle, which I am. You have the developer angle, like, yeah, that's interesting. That's worth researching, right?
Yeah.
So you have the competition angle. So for example, from the competition point of view, I'm really interested about how long Echo will come out and how well is going to play. From the player geek perspective, now well, I play Players Unknown Battleground for the last 3 weeks every night.
I'm in the same boat with you.
Yeah, so obviously this is not something that I'm doing for research. We're not creating any type even close related to that title. But privately I'm playing Players Unknown right now. What I'm ashamed of is I still play Hearthstone, and I love this game, and I hate this game because it takes so much. I mean, every idle time I have, like standing in line or something like that, I play Hearthstone. But in the recent time, in games that interested me, like from a developer perspective, are actually many Polish games because okay. It's like gameplay versus message, you might say. You have these two Polish games called Super Hot. You probably heard about it.
I love Super Hot. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fascinating games from a mechanic perspective. And then you have Bound, which is an exclusive for PlayStation 4. It also have a PlayStation VR version, which fascinates me in terms of art, music, and the message that the fact that they touched a tough topic of broken down family, which is funny because in the end it's a platformer game, which is
yeah. I had no idea that's what that was about. I remember when this game came out because I really wanted to get it because of the art style. It was just it's a beautiful game. Yeah. So that's
yeah. It's a custom engine because the creators of Bound are ex demo scene programmers.
Okay.
So they really know their stuff. So they're actually creating a custom engine for their every project. One of the best programmers in Poland, actually.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. Awesome. So where do you see your studio going in the future? What do you have anything you want to share about what the next plans are for Anchar Studios?
So being a 5 years, like almost five years studio, it's my 11th year in the industry. So right now I'm like thinking about where to take the studio next. And so many studios, for example, do work for hire only because they want to, in the end, they want to do their dream project and stop doing work for hire as soon as possible.
Right.
But I always look for like role models. I always look for companies that fascinate me and how to look at how they developed over the years and try to like pick the like one of their best decisions and implement them into my overall strategy. And right now I'm looking at two companies, which is Shell Games, the creators of I Expect You to Die at the End, VR game.
Oh, yeah.
Because Shell Games is actually also a third-party studio. Okay. So they're actually like this bigger, better American Anchar Studios, right? I'm really glad that Jesse Shell is managing to do this 30% our stuff, 70% work for hire, because I want to continue that, because it gives you so much comfort in terms of like we're not desperate every time we're releasing a game. Is this going to be our last game, right? Is this going to be our like Final Fantasy, you might say?
Yeah.
So I want to continue that. And in terms of first party, what types of games we want to do? I'm looking at one of the best Polish companies, which is called 11-Bit Studios, the creators of This War of Mine.
Oh yeah.
Because what fascinates me is that I want to create video games in which we tell hard stories, but they are told by gameplay. So, you know, for example, Witcher doesn't meet that requirement. Witcher is an awesome game, but it's an awesome game because it has an awesome story. And actually, most games tell stories by telling stories, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's text, it's voice, it's cutscenes. So they're not taking advantage of the medium. I mean, you can do the same thing in a movie or in a book. So for me, the best games are games like This War of Mine, like Papers, Please, like this small, quirky game called Reigns. These are games in which there is a storytelling is a huge part, but it's actually told by the actions of the player, not by the script, if you know what I mean.
I gotcha.
So that's my like holy grail. I hope that I'm gonna like the Unsure Studio is gonna create such a game someday. And this is our like strategy to try to make a mark on that type of games in the upcoming years.
Well, best of luck to you. I think your guys are going down the right path, and I mean you definitely have that vision, you know, passion there for sure. So that's really exciting. I'm looking forward to see what you guys come up with in the future. So to wrap up everything, can you tell me where can we find Anshar Studios? Where can we find you if you're on Twitter or anything like that? Let me know.
Yeah. I mean, we have like the simplest Twitter handles ever because my Twitter is Lukasz Hatsura. So my name and my surname. And Anshar Studios Twitter handle is Anshar Studios. And we're communicating. I'm always communicating about everything only professionally. So what types of game are we making? What is happening in the industry? What is happening in the Polish industry also? Because actually Polish industry is awesome and we're really close and doing a lot of different stuff together. So this is what I do online. Yeah.
Perfect. That's awesome. Well, Lukasz, thank you so much. We are going to take a quick break and then come back with our wrap-up conclusion on the podcast. So hang tight and we'll be back shortly.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
All right, everybody, that concludes our discussion topic this week. Thank you again, Lukasz, for coming on to the podcast and talking to us about VR. It's very exciting. That concludes everything for this week. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you have something you want to hear us talk about or somebody you wish to hear us discuss with on our podcast, please reach out to us on theinnergamer.net or on our social channels. So, guys, what are you going to play next week? It is July 4th, so this means you have today off.
Yeah.
And what games are we going to play?
I am definitely going to be getting into PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds for certain. And I picked up another game in my Steam library. It looks like a crazy space western. If that sounds... It was on sale. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Anyone?
That sounds like...
Hard West?
Oh no, I know what you're talking about, though. No, like Space Western reminds me of Serenity in... what's the series? Firefly?
Yeah.
Because it was like Space Western, kind of.
I'm going to be playing Hard West.
Okay. Wait, do you have a picture of it? I want to see a picture of it. So, guys, check out Hard West.
Yeah, check out Hard West in the Steam library. That's what I'm playing. Yeah. Luis, what are you playing?
I think I'm going to finally start Civ 6, but only after I beat Ori. So if you never hear from me again, it's because I'm playing Civilization.
I'm excited to hear about that. I was listening to a podcast. Somebody was talking about, they were like, yeah, my boss, Sid Meier, was talking to me. So they had a conversation about what is it like to say those words? Like, my boss, Sid Meier, just
my
casually.
Boss, Sid Meier.
Yeah, Sid was hanging out with me the other day and we were talking about whatever.
You know, Sid Meier.
Apparently he's like super humble and like just super cool and
He doesn't want to glorify.
Even though he puts his name on everything.
Yeah, he doesn't want to glorify the fact that he has this entire empire of games.
It was so funny. But yeah, I mean, imagine working for Sid Meier. But I mean, he is one of those names that just everybody knows.
Resonates.
You just know, like him and Miyamoto, like that's those are the two names that you know. That's cool though.
But yeah,
I am gonna play. I don't know.
Good talk.
Actually, probably Prey. I bought Prey a while back.
All right.
I might jump into that, and then I really want to play Life is Strange. I want to finally feel what that game's about. And
yeah, I have a couple of friends who are playing it who are like huge into it. They've been playing it together. So.
Oh, like streaming and stuff.
No, just sitting in the same room playing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just hanging out and playing. That'd like be a good game to play.
Making it like a sit-down experience.
Right, right. That's awesome. Cool. Well, that is it, everybody. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more gaming goodness. You can visit theinnergamer.net for our podcast, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend.
We also have a Patreon, which is a way for you, our listeners, to donate to our cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see and hear. Plus, if you do support us, we will have some awesome rewards waiting for you, such as being a guest on the podcast, getting some exclusive content, or even joining us maybe for a D&D session. So please head on over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. And that concludes it. My name is Devin Dury.
I'm Brayton Oski.
I'm Luis Gonzalez.
And you've been listening to
The Inner Gamer.
All right. Let's go pop some fireworks.
That's what amazing.
I'm
going to
play. What am I talking about? I'm not playing anything today. I'm going to go pop fireworks.
I'm going to go blow shit up.
I'm going to play like outside. Like an American. Like a not nerd.
And I'm proud to be an American. I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you. I knew you were right.
Oh, shit. Where's my mouse? There it is.
Waiting for so long. I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you.
That is going in the end of the podcast.
Is it?